now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Hey, this is Cooper. On the show this week, we talk to the number one record man for the retro and lounge scene, Lee Joseph from Dionysus Records, examining why Don Draper is the epitome of lounge. I've got some cool retro airline hostess flight bags to check out, plus some of the best lounge and exotica gigs right across the globe here at the Cocktail Nation. Right now, Tiki Aki Orchestra and Theme for Jet Setters on the Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation. Thanks to UltraSwank.net.
Brazil, where hearts were entertained in June. We stood beneath an amber moon and softly murmured someday soon we'd kiss. Tomorrow was another day. The morning found me miles away. With still a million things to say. Come on back, baby. And now, when twilight dims the skies above, recalling thrills of our love. There's one thing I'm certain of, return I will to old Brazil. Hill. recalling thrills of our love. There's one thing I'm talking about. Return, I will.
Donation with Coop Cooper, Royal Crown Review and Brazil, joined by the number one man for retro and lounge scene music, Lee Joseph from Dionysus Records, direct from LA. Hey, buddy, how are you going?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, your company has been around for a long, long time, and I thought to myself, you know, you handle so many of the acts that we talk to that we need to get you on the phone to have a bit of a chat about your record label and what you've been doing since 1983, I think, isn't it?
Yep. 1983.
What started this crazy ride for you?
I was working at a record store in Tucson called Roads to Moscow as their manager. It was a used indie punk rock store. And I had become obsessed with some 60s garage at the time. I had a cassette-only label. I was releasing all kinds of local punk and art bands. So it was a lot of noise stuff. A lot of, like, not so much the punk rock from a few years back, but a lot of DIYs. I think I ended up with about 15 releases on that label. It was called Iconoclast International. Having grown up as a child in the 60s, listening to AM radio and watching television, I was very lucky because mainstream music was pretty cool. Kind of lost sight of that. You know, punk rock happened, and then punk rock seemed to turn into disco. It got really lame. The DIY stuff was what I really liked. Industrial noise, DIY, indie. There was a lot of great stuff coming out from Los Angeles at that time. I liked the early hardcore punk, as well as rockabilly and 60s garage, psych, and surf. But I started becoming really obsessed with the 60s garage thing, and I was in a band called The Suspects in the late 70s. It was one of Tucson's first punk bands. Moved to Phoenix and joined another band. Came back. Some friends of mine who were in bands and myself started a group called Johnny Seven. We ended up being the Big Fish in a Small Pond in Tucson. We opened for the Romantics and the B-52s. We had an album out. We were signed to a local label. That band broke up, and myself and this guy, Joe Dodge, who was the rhythm guitar player, started Yard Trauma, and we did industrial noise. We had a blender and a shortwave radio and poetry, tape loops. But at the time, a keyboard player named Lance Kaufman wanted to join us, and he had a Farfisa organ. And I said, yes, you can join us only if you exclusively use the Farfisa organ. Because Joe was writing these songs that were kind of garage-based, so we kind of took a left turn and started doing the 60s garage sounding thing. And I decided to put out the first Dionysus record. The name of the cassette label was Iconoclast International. I figured, okay, I'm going back to kind of something a little bit more traditional here. And I was taking a humanities course in a junior college. I never completed college. It was just something I did. And fascinated with the Greek and Roman gods, so I named the label Dionysus, not knowing that, you know, later on nobody would pronounce it or know what it meant. But I did the first record. It was Yard Trauma, Some People, backed with No Conclusions. That was November of 1983. Pressed 500 copies. First fan letter came from Jello Biafra, the Kennedys, and Ruth Schwartz, who at the time worked at Rough Trade, bought some copies from me, and we stayed in touch. She later formed the Mordam Record Label Distribution Company. It was a co-op style record distribution company, much different than everything else that was around at the time. And though most of their labels were punk, she had Alternative Tentacles and a few other things. Although San Francisco left-wingy punk rockers liked the 60s garage stuff, so she asked Dionysus to join up, which I did in 1985. So there is the beginning of Dionysus.
Yeah. Was it a difficult thing for you to learn the record trade? Because, you know, it's not just simple as, you know, hey, you know, some bands approach us, or we find a band and we say, you know, we're gonna put something together and we're gonna send it out there. Because there's a whole bunch of complex licensing issues that you have to deal with. I imagine this is a steep learning curve for you when you started out.
I never really set out to start a record label. It was all very accidental and haphazard. I just learned as I went.
I mean, you're not a record producer, so to speak. You're more of a label, a distributor, aren't
right,
you?
Right, a label. At one point, I was producing bands. I mean, I don't have a budget anymore to stick bands in the studios. During the 90s, yep, when things were, we were selling a lot of records.
Mm.
I had a budget for most bands to go in the studio, you know, anywhere from, well, I won't tell you what the budget was. It was still not great, but it was enough to put a band in a decent 24-track studio and produce
quality record,
a very good quality record.
Yeah, yeah. So you sort of, you obviously that was something you did a little bit of in the 90s, but you've mostly focused on the handling and the distribution and these days moving into publicity as well.
Well, I started the publicity company. It's after my name, Lee Joseph Publicity for the Visual Arts. I started this in 2006 because at the time I just wanted to bury the label. I wasn't interested in continuing. I was just going to sell back catalog, and I had become friends with quite a few artists. I was more interested in art than music at the time, and going to a lot of art shows. And I had worked as a DJ. I quit playing music in 1999 after going on tour with Davy Allen and the Eras. I became a DJ. I had at one point 3 weekly club nights.
Wow.
I just at that point, I felt much more comfortable playing records than dealing with musicians on any level. So in 06, at an art show, I came up with an idea of doing a visual arts publicity company on kind of the street, lowbrow pops realism level, and talked to a few friends who were everybody from Billy Shire owns La Luz de Jesus Gallery to several artists, including my friend Shag, and they all thought it was a good idea. So I did it. I had no experience doing that before. I just kind of learned as I went. But at the time, my back catalog started selling and regenerated a little bit of my interest in the label. So I put up a new website, a shopping cart for mail order, repressed several titles, and became interested in doing the label again.
I said to a few people that I've spoken to, and I mentioned this on the show last week, I've been involved in radio for a long time, and I've actually dealt with, you know, as I've worked as a music director at some radio stations, I've dealt with a lot of different record labels, and I can tell you that, you know, from the way you're doing things, me looking from outside in and talking to you, you know, you seem to be, you know, well and truly up with what's going on in the industry, and you're doing all the same things that the big guys are doing, obviously in a smaller way because you're a smaller label, but you know, you've really got your finger right on the pulse. I don't know whether that's through accident or design.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It is a little bit by accident. Dionysus, as small as it is, I've outlived most of my contemporaries.
Mm.
Which is quite an accomplishment, especially from somebody who just kind of walked into this business. And I've never had any technical training. I just learned as I went, basically.
And that's the whole, that's kind of like the whole punk thing, isn't it? You know, like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I've got a reputation for garage rock, exotic band, surf, and these are the types of music that I love. And that's where I stay these days. I veered, not necessarily away from that, but I put out all kinds of records at one point. You know, just if I liked something, I released it. It didn't always work because the label had already been typecast by many. I think at one point I wasn't very happy about it, but now I'm actually pretty proud of the legacy.
All right, we're going to leave you with Stereophonic Space Sound Unlimited and Follow the Duke. Good to talk to you, Lee.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No worries.
And thanks for your support.
No problems. Follow the Duke, Stereophonic Space Sound Unlimited on the Cocteau Nation.
people staring at you. They keep peeking over their shoulders, wondering where you're going tonight. Where are you going, Frank?
Don't tell me not to fly. I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Don't
the Cocktail Nation.
Thank you. Aloha. This is Luke Floyd from Don Tiki.
Hi, this is Andy Nazell, Tiki Joe's Ocean, Dean Greaves, DSG Sound.
Extra dry, extra cold, rocks glass, no rocks, three olives.
The Cocktail Nation.
Donation with Lance Leader Cuba Cuba and Robert Drazen with Desire. You know, when it comes to lounge culture, there's one man who really does epitomize the culture through and through, and that is Don Draper. The character of Don Draper is that he's a guy that looks great in formal wear, business wear, and casual wear. He's got great taste in clothes and great taste in women. He's got money, he's successful, he's confident, well-groomed. And basically, he looks like $1 million. Even the women he goes for have that certain X factor. However, when he broke up with Betty, and, well, I think most of us would probably say thank goodness he did, we discovered his taste in furniture is somewhat ordinary. The bachelor pad that he had in New York City was kind of boring. Whilst fairly spacious, it had that kind of dark and man-brooding dark cave band thing going on. But it suited his needs, and let's face it, it was an apartment that was fully furnished, not something that you actually chose. In season 5, he marries Megan and moves into a suite pad, and it's probably because of her taste. Megan, to me, is a bit of a disappointing scenario that I don't think Don is the kind of guy who probably should be married. He's a bachelor, and he just needs to accept that fact. In reality, he only married Megan because one part of his life he couldn't really handle, and that's his children. He simply can't relate to them that well and needs a woman to take care of that part of his life. Sure, he's good at handling business mergers, difficult clients, difficult employees, difficult employers. When it comes to his kids, he kind of struggles in that area. Probably in reality, he needed to pay for a babysitter and a cleaner, and he would have had everything he wanted along with all the women that he could possibly want. Sure, Don Draper's a fictional character, we all know that. But there's something to take away from his persona. He's controlling, he takes care of business, he's very stylish. So to me, there is something that we can all learn from Don Draper. Let's talk about his treatment of women, which many find appalling, but I think he probably handles his female relationships fairly well. His approach to dating and relationships is that he moves on fairly soon as as soon as it doesn't work anymore, never seems to lose sight of who he is in his true individuality until recently when he hooked up with Megan. As a man, he's not the kind of guy who's going to be under the thumb from the little woman. Sure, Betty tried but failed at the end of the day, and Don rebelled and truly showed his real character and real value as an independent man. Don Draper, to my mind, is the epitome of cool. He's classy, intelligent, well-off, and a true independent and decisive man. That's just one of the Life in the Penthouse articles that you can check out online on my website, cocktailnation.net. And we also have some of our articles published on the ultraswank.net page. Here's Beverly Kenny and Undecided on the Cocktail Nation.
Then you say you will, and then you won't. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? Now you want to play, and then it's no. And when you say you'll stay, that's when you go. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? I've been sitting on a fence, and it doesn't make much sense, 'cause you keep me in suspense, and you know it. You promise to return, when you don't, I really burn. Well, I guess I'll never learn, and I show it. If you've got a heart and if you're kind, don't keep us apart, make up your mind. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? And it doesn't make much sense, 'cause you keep me in suspense, and you know it. You promise to return, when you don't I really burn. I guess I'll never learn, and I show it. If you've got a heart and if you're kind, don't keep us apart, make up your mind. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
I must have gone further into orbit than I thought.
Cranbrook.
Just listen to your radio all the time.
Hi, this is Janice from Post Point, and you're listening to the Cocktail Nation with Kim Kimber.
I'm mad about the boy, and I know it's stupid to be mad about the boy. I'm so ashamed of it, but must admit the sleepless nights I've had about the boy. On the silver screen, he melts my foolish heart in every single scene. Although I'm quite aware that here and there are traces of the cad about the boy. Lord knows I'm not a fool girl. I really shouldn't care. Lord knows I'm not a schoolgirl who's in the flurry of her first affair. Will it ever cloy, this odd diversity of misery and joy? I'm feeling quite insane and young again, and all because I'm mad about the boy. I'm feeling quite insane and young again, and all because I'm mad about the boy.
The Cocktail Nation Lounge leader, Coop Cooper. Lots of new articles on the Ultra Swank website. One that I just love is about retro airline and hostess flight bags. From online shop In Retro comes these beautiful retro airline hostess flight bags straight out of a relaxing intercontinental flight in the 1960s. They are reproductions, but they look as real as you could possibly get, and they won't set you back a whole lot like some of the Marc Jacobs designer Pan Am bags that arrived on the scene not so long ago. In Retro features both airline bags and smaller airline hostess bags for storing all your must-have items for a long transatlantic flight. You might like to check out the links and some of the great images on the Ultra Swank website. Here's Grace Knight, Don't Know Much About Love on the Cocktail Nation.
I don't know much about love. Don't know much about love. I don't know much about love. Only know that it makes me sure about love, not too sure about love, no, no. I don't know much about love, only know that it makes me bad. Love may be what you make it, make of it what you might. It might just be where you take it, take it and make it all right. I don't know much about men. Don't know much about men. No, no, no. I don't know where or when. Only know that they make me feel so good. Love is a mixture. Love is a soldier. Love is a stranger. Love is a
Cocktailnation with Coop Cooper, and do check out our website, cocktailnation.net. We've got so much great stuff there, fantastic content like our World of Swank gig guide. We've also got plenty of news from across the world of swank and some reviews as well. Lots of great stuff, including links to buy my book, Coop Cooper's Cocktailnation, the interviews volume 1 and 2. So do check it out online, cocktailnation.net.
Love is like a never-ending melody. Poets have compared it to a symphony. A symphony conducted by the lighting of the moon. But our song of love is slightly out of tune. Once your kisses raised me to a fever pitch. Now the orchestration doesn't seem so rich. Seems to me you've changed the tune we used to sing. Like the bossa nova, love should swing. We used to harmonize two souls in perfect time. Now the song is different and the words don't even rhyme. 'Cause you forgot the melody our hearts would always croon. And so what good's a heart that's slightly out of tune? your heart to mine the way it used to be. Join with me in harmony and sing a song of loving. We're bound to get in tune again. Before too long, there'll be no disinfernal when your heart belongs to me completely. Then you won't be slightly out of tune. You'll sing along with me.
Cocktail Nation.
Maxwell Smart, Agent 86.
86, report to headquarters immediately.
Just a minute, who is this?
This is the chief. Who else would be calling you on your shoe?
Cocktail Nation with lounge leader Coop Cooper and Jackie Gleason with Ruby. Next week on the show, talking to Kramer about Lounge and Bachelor Pad movies. Look forward to your company then. I'm going to leave you with Lena Horne. Stay hip.
Can it really be love? Can love?